Hi, this is Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. It's time to go through the top 20 books that I've read in 2019. We're halfway through the year and I'm on pace to hit about 50 books. And today I want to share with you my book of the year and another monster that I'm halfway through. It's absolutely epic. And it's actually a darker book. So I'm going to talk about that one and some of the lessons that I've learned there. Hi, this is Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. And today you're going to end up spending way too much money on Amazon. All right. Once I tell you about these books and get you all fired up to go and read them and learn the lessons that I did, you will want to go somewhere and buy some books. You know, maybe some secondhand bookstore in town will get your money too. And through this list, you're going to get a greater perspective on leadership and on the struggles that you're going through. And again, a look inside the darkest book I'm reading about the darkest time in the 20th century. Now, there's also a page turner here that I couldn't put down even when it was past my bedtime. And it reminded me back when I started reading books when I was about 13 or 14, and I stumbled across Stephen King. And the very first Stephen King book I read was Thinner, and then I read It. And even if you read 100 pages of It in a night, you barely make a dent in that thing. It was like 900 pages long. And then it was The Stand, and so on and so forth. And you know, some of his short story books, two of his short stories, my favorite ones are The Jaunt, which they didn't make a movie of, and then The Mist, which they did make a movie about, which I haven't watched because I wouldn't watch it. But The Mist and The Jaunt, those two just really messed with my head. Anyways, I'm not talking about Stephen King books today. I'm talking about books that are going to help your business, help your career, help your perspective on life. And these are really going to help. Now, Early to Rise Radio is brought to you by my first game-changing book. That's right. I've written a couple books too. The Perfect Day Formula, about how to own your day and control your life. If you don't have a copy of that, get it at freeperfectdaybook.com. Just pay a little shipping and handling and it will improve every area of your life. The second book that I've written helps you overcome stress and what I call entrepreneurial anxiety. I mean, but it's also for busy parents. It's for anybody that suffers from actual anxiety or just from stress in general. Then you can get a free copy of that one at beunstoppablebook.com. Now, when you get that one, you also get a bonus video course as well. Now, on to my list. And we'll start with a quote from my number one book of the year so far. And in 2018, the book of the year for me was Relentless. And this year, it's absolutely going to be Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. Now, it came out in 2017. I'm a little late to this party, but man, it's great. And here's the quote that I want to share with you. And it's actually from like the last page. He says, "Do not settle for a job or a profession or even a career. Seek a calling. Even if you don't know what that means, seek it." Great advice, right? If you're following your calling, he says, the fatigue will be easier to bear. The disappointments will be fuel and the highs will be like nothing you've ever felt. And I mean, man, what a book Shoe Dog is. I mean, it's really well written, but it's also so well written and the stories are so in depth that you wonder, like, how can this guy remember what happened 50 years ago? Because he's writing about 1962 as if it was last week. It was so vivid in this book about girlfriends and trips to Mount Fuji, all this stuff that he did right out of college, all the running that he did, you know, the actual one run that he describes. Like, man, he's making some of this stuff up, it seems like. But that was the book that I was reading under the covers with a snack, and I was staying up well past my bedtime and saying, just one more chapter, so you've got to read this book. In fact, I just finished it last night, and I read about 100 pages to finish it off, and it was great. There was just so many lessons in it, and you look at it, you look at Nike, however you say it, you look at the company now, or even if you look at the company in the 1980s, it went public on December 2nd, 1980. Everybody just looks at the tip of the iceberg, right? They don't see the fact that up until that point when it went public, man, they were like a day, you know, they could have went bankrupt for every single day for the first 20 years of existence. Started in 1962-ish, 1980, they went public. and they had so many things they had to go through. So at one point, 1977, you know, they're $10 million a year, which is $42 million in today's money when adjusted for inflation. And the guy could barely afford lunch for somebody that he was, you know, trying to get onto his team. Barely afford lunch. So that's the story of Phil Knight. He put everything on the line. You know, he has regrets. He mentions regrets at the end, but he also would regret not doing it. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult for the entrepreneur who loves the thing that they create to then look back and say, oh, you know, I wish I had more time with my family. I wish I had kept better care of myself. Man, this guy just shows you how put through the ringer he was growing this business. He battled FBI investigations, partners that stabbed him in the back. And I mean, imagine this. He's importing shoes to start from Japan in 1962. You know, you're only 15 years or so after World War II, after, you know, mortal enemies, you know, people that wanted to kill America, and he's doing business with them. But he's living in the United States and he's trying to coordinate shipments. They're sending letters. That's all they could do, was send letters or do phone calls back and forth in the 60s. No email, there's no texting, there's no FaceTime, there's no Slack. None of this stuff that's so convenient for communication today. And he managed to build a company. It's absolutely incredible. And he would get the wrong shoes, but he made the best out of the worst. And companies ripped him off, and his competitors lobbied the government to shut him down. He holds a grudge against this one guy in the book, and it's a pretty good part near the end. It reminded me of the book 1984, just the sheer stupidity of government employees and the anger and power trips that they go on. So Knight and his company, they suffered a lot of adversity that you might be going through today. And he has another great quote. He says, when you're a rebel and an innovator, you will always have a bullseye on your back. The bigger you get, the bigger the bullseye. It's not one man's opinion. It's a law of nature. So you might feel that right now. You might feel like whether people in your social circle are talking about you, people in your community, people on the internet are always talking about you. Listen, we got to be okay with that. We got to let that water go off our backs. We can't let the struggles, you can't let feeling overwhelmed, you can't let a little bit of credit card debt stop you from moving ahead in life. We all go through these struggles. You know, we lose people. Knight lost people in his life that, you know, he was banking on Steve Prefontaine to help grow the company. And then one day he got in a car accident and passed away. So you have to understand that life is going to hit you with sledgehammers. But in 40 years from now, you're not going to want to look back and have the regret of saying, I stopped when I got hit by the sledgehammer. It's better to have kept going and found something new to be your next regret. What drove him through this? So what drove him through those toughest times? And it's the stuff I talk about in chapter 21 of my Perfect Day Formula book. Values and vision. Values and vision drive every decision. He imagined back in the 1960s a world where people would wear running shoes to work. Now, today, I mean, you wear running shoes with a suit. Everybody wears running shoes. Imagine a world where people didn't wear running shoes, right? It's harder to imagine that than people wear a world where people wear running shoes everywhere. But back then they didn't. And he thought that, and he was driven by that. So Knight was one of the crazy ones, a rebel and an innovator, a trusted straight shooter, and the type of person who just didn't take no for an answer. Didn't take no for an answer even when fighting the government. So you got to give this guy credit. Holy cow. Holy cow. And it was the people that he surrounded himself with. It was his coach, Bill Bowerman, the legendary running coach from Oregon, who had the crazy idea of putting rubber into a waffle iron. You probably heard that story. And this guy, he was tough. He was tough. And one of the things I talk about in my coaching programs is you must have accountability to someone you deeply do not want to disappoint. And Phil Knight deeply did not want to disappoint Bill Bowerman. I mean, he gave him part of the company. He made him millions of dollars. I mean, he loved this guy like maybe more than he loved his own father, probably more than he loved his own father. And it's just powerful. For whatever reason, we have that. You know, we look up to mentors, and this is for men and women. It's not just men. But for some strange reason, we get like that, don't we? And when we find that person, You know, provided they share our morals and ethics and we want to do something that impresses them, that's where we can move mountains in our life. So a couple more big business lessons from Shoe Dog. The funny thing is that book ends in 1980. So, I mean, he's got another three books in him, I hope, and a lot more lessons. But the first lesson I want to share with you is move faster. Okay, so every day, Knight and his team faced a crisis. Every day was a nonstop stress show. But one incident in particular, I can't remember if it was a problem in California or a problem in Japan, and somebody had to go and fix it. And he said to one of his key people, he said, get on a plane and go solve the problem. And the guy goes, what plane? And Knight just goes, the next one. Like, you go and you get on that plane. And you've probably seen movies where people just go and get on the next plane. And every empire builder I know moves fast like that. They make decisions immediately and they deal with the consequences as they come. The more conservative you are, the less risk you're going to take. And, you know, risk is an art and science when you're a business owner. I know that, man, I have moved too slow in some aspects of my life. Fortunately, I haven't lost anything by moving too slow, any of the major opportunities, I think, in my life. But I remember when I was buying Early to Rise, I kind of hummed and hawed on it for too long. And then eventually I moved and I flew to Florida and made the deal with Mark Ford. But I could have lost that deal because I did wait probably about 3 days too long. I didn't get on the next plane when I should have got on the next plane. So if you're a beginner entrepreneur, if you're a struggling business owner, if you're lost in life, you're taking the opposite approach of moving fast. And you're waiting, you're hesitating, and procrastinating. And this is a road to failure and the death of your dreams. So don't let delays kill your dreams. Look at your internal decision speedometer. Are you pushing the limits or are you coasting? And then decide if you need to move faster. The second big lesson is know your clients. So at one point, these guys came up with the idea of Air, right? The Nike Air. And they were outside scientists and they brought them to him. And Phil Knight kind of laughed it off. And then he was a shoe dog. And a shoe dog is a person who just loves shoes and so on and so forth. So being a shoe dog, he rips open his shoes and he puts these air soles in. And he goes for a run. He comes back and he goes, okay, guys, I think we're on to something here. I think this is a real deal. It took them years to perfect the technology, but the rest is history, right? It was huge, huge game changer in the 80s for the company. And then the third thing is be a straight shooter. So they released a shoe called the Tailwind. It was a huge success in 1978 and 1979. And then all of a sudden they start getting returns because they had put silver paint on the shoe and there were little metal bits in the paint. And when you run around a lot, they were flying through the air, these metal bits, and they shredded the shoe to bits. So they ended up recalling thousands of shoes and they recycled them all and they apologized and they were forgiven because they were known as a company of straight shooters. They didn't hide anything. When something went wrong, they apologized. And it was also known in the industry, the salespeople, they knew the deals they were getting, the negotiations were always straight. And so your business matters, but your reputation matters even more. And when you take care of that, you're going to take care of your business in the long run. So lots and lots of lessons, but also super entertaining, which leads me to the runner-up book, which is also super entertaining and full of lots of lessons. And I read this book on a Sunday afternoon in late spring. And the book is You Can't Hurt Me, or Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, who was the SEAL in Jesse Itzler's book, Living with a SEAL. So David Goggins abused, grew up in a bad household. His father was a terrible, terrible man. Like, you know, like those stereotypes of pimps in the 1980s and 70s in Harlem. Like, that's what his father was. He was a really bad man and he physically abused the family, threatened them. And fortunately, his mom was strong, strong woman, and she helped them escape. And then they went through even more hardships after they escaped. So it got worse because they moved to Indiana and they didn't really fit in. So here's this guy and he's working as like a fast food inspector, not a fast food inspector, but an inspector of fast food restaurants in the middle of the night. And he goes in, he's like counting the cockroaches. Like that's what he does. And one day, like all these cockroaches are on his back and it's a horrible, horrible moment. And he ends up wanting to join the SEALs. You know, he was a reservist, I think, or something before, maybe in the army. And then he got out of shape. And then he's like, I'm going to go back in and become a SEAL. So he somehow gets in. It was very, very difficult for him to get in. He goes and he gets hurt the first time he goes through Hell Week. Then he goes back and he chronicles his second Hell Week and he gets hurt after that one too. And then he goes back for the third time. So he's the only man to ever complete Hell Week three times. Now that's the only amount, you can only do it three times. And then if he didn't make it through unscathed through the third time, he would not have made it. So he makes it through that. And there's like, after you get through Hell Week, it's like super hard. It's like the first circle of hell after that, not the seventh circle of hell. And so he keeps on going. And then he just does amazing other things in life. He starts running ultra marathons and like, but stupidly, like with a box of crackers and one bottle of water to go run 100 miles. Not the sharpest decision there. But anyways, he just shows the punishment that you can take. And so he inspired me to do something because I don't want to do endurance training. I've done enough endurance training in the past and I just don't want the injuries associated with it. I really don't want my toenails falling off like he's okay with. And so I was like, what can I do to really push myself that I will dislike, but I will learn from? That's what we want you to understand. So, I mean, that's kind of like one of the underlying messages of Can't Hurt Me. You have to build up a calloused mind is the way that he describes it, so that you can withstand anything. And when you can withstand anything, then you make the right decisions under times of stress. So he inspired me to not eat at all on the first of every month. Now, you probably think I'm an idiot, and I am an idiot, which makes you correct. But the way that this operates is, let's say, you know, August 1st. So August 1st, I'm going to be doing this again. July 31st, I have dinner. Generally, I have it pretty late. And then I won't eat again until the morning of the 2nd. So it's more than a 24-hour fast. It's 24 hours plus the hours that I stop eating on the last day of the month. And for all those hours that I sleep until I wake up and decide to eat on the 2nd day of the month. And it sucks. It sucks. I call the hours between 2 and 4 p.m. the witching hours, you know. So by then I had fasted probably, you know, let's say I ate dinner on the 31st at 8 p.m. Well, now I'm 12, 4, 16, I'm 18 to 20 hours into the fast, and it sucks. And you realize most of what you're doing when you're eating is out of ritual and routine and boredom, because my hunger levels rarely get past a 5 out of 10 because I kind of keep track. Even at dinner time, you know, even when you're 24 hours into the fast, I'm not actually that hungry. I'm just really bored and really tired because I also do this on water only, so no caffeine. And I do have a bit of caffeine through green tea and some of these, you know, Zevia sodas and stuff like that. So I usually have about 100 milligrams of caffeine. And if you take away all the caffeine, you take away all the food, and you take away all the rituals and all the enjoyment of eating, whether you know, you love getting a smoothie or you love going out for taco at lunchtime, and you take all that away, you're kind of left with like, what do I do? Man, I've like, okay, I guess I'll just keep working. This really sucks. And so between 2 and 4, after I've missed 2 meals and I've, you know, really missed out on some enjoyment in my day, that's when I kind of get a little bit grumpy. But it's also a little bit tired too because of no caffeine. So anyways, that's what I do on the first. And it was inspired by the Can't Hurt Me because I want to do that. And so I'm going to do this on the first of every month, possibly for the rest of my life. And I'm only 2 months into it, but I've done it. I've stuck to it. And I've got a couple of real big challenges. So August 1st will be the first day of our Blacksmith Liberty and Entrepreneurship Camp in Lithuania that I do every summer. This is our 10th year of doing it. And so on the first, everybody arrives at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and we have a big welcome dinner, and I'm going to have to sit there and not eat through it. So it's going to be a challenge. And then on November 1st, I'm going to a big mastermind held by my friend Joel Marion, and there's a big welcome dinner on the evening of the first. So I'm going to have to sit through that and not eat and explain myself to 100 other entrepreneurs why I'm not eating. And they're going to think I'm crazy, and they're going to go, is this some type of religion? I go, I don't, not yet. Maybe I'll start a religion around it. Who knows? But that's my thing. So the book inspired me to push myself in training and influence and impact to do more and waste less. One of the funny things is I quickly looked at his Instagram account, David Goggins, and he has a million followers and he follows zero people. So he doesn't actually run the account. Somebody else runs it clearly. But I loved the essentialism in that. I follow zero people. I follow 13 people on Instagram, and I think that's not that many. But for him to have zero followers and a million followers and to follow zero is pretty powerful. And he also shows you how to be a better leader. Obviously, he had to be a leader through the hell weeks for his team members. And it is just incredibly inspiring. And I checked the book out because, well, he became famous after Jesse's book. And then, you know, he's a great speaker. I thought about having him at my Perfect Life retreat, but I hesitated. I waited just like I didn't move fast enough and somebody else scooped him up because I was too cheap to pay for him when I heard what his price was, $40,000, $40,000 for a speaker. I should have scooped him up. I didn't get him. So I lose. I lose because I just wasn't moving fast. So lesson learned there. But one of my friends, a real estate agent, saw him speak at an event and actually got a chance to talk to David Goggins. And David Goggins said something that changed her life dramatically. He said, if I read your biography, if I read the story of your life, or if I knew the story of your life, would it inspire me? Would it inspire me? So think about that. Ask yourself that right now. If a stranger read your biography, would it inspire them? And if not, maybe you need to change some things. Or maybe you think, well, what does it matter if I inspire somebody? Maybe that doesn't bother you. But if you want to inspire people and you're not having yet lived a life of inspiration to people, then you need to change things. So, man, when I read David Goggins' book, I look at my books and go, man, I mean, I know they help people get more done and they've been so powerful to helping people overcome anxiety, but it just seems like I haven't done anything yet. So it's a good perspective, very good perspective. But the leadership is also huge. And to me, becoming a better leader is a really, really big aspect of my study this year. So a couple of leadership books that I've read, I read Legacy by James Kerr. And Legacy by James Kerr is if you're a rugby fan, you're going to love this book because it's about the All Blacks. And when I think of the All Blacks, I know a little bit about rugby because I used to train Canada's national rugby team. And I always thought the All Blacks were always good. They never lost. But they went through a period of time, I think in the 90s, late 90s, where they weren't good. They had a bad culture. There was too much drinking. There was too much complaining. And you look at these guys now and you go, I can't imagine these guys would complain. I can imagine them drinking. I just can't imagine them complaining. And fighting, you know, the infighting and the whininess, you know, that accompanies infighting. And they had those issues. And then they brought in some guy, I can't remember his name, and he just helped, I think it's Graham something, and he built the culture. He built the culture. And so now they have a legacy that's passed down. They pair a new person with a veteran, and they do a lot of great stuff that can be used in your business too. Because they do a lot of business consulting or business speaking or whatever. And I think that was kind of the point of the book. But it was valuable, very valuable. Although I will say I didn't love how it was written. I thought it was poorly written, the book. Who am I to judge? But anyways, Legacy by James Kerr, check it out. It's a short read, so you can ignore the not so great writing. The next book I read on leadership was Outrageous Empowerment by a Canadian guy named Ron Lovett. Lots of funny stories in there. This is a guy who, very much like Phil Knight, started from scratch, shouldn't have been an entrepreneur, made some huge mistakes that almost crushed him. Like, for example, this guy, Ron Lovett, ran security companies, providing personal security. And, you know, he would promise like a concert of 40,000 people that he was going to deliver all the security. And then he would have to go and like, go, okay, I just made this promise. I don't have anybody to deliver this. And he'd have to like figure out how to do it. So he was definitely moving really fast. And then one time he was doing Jay-Z's, the rapper, singer, artist, Jay-Z's personal security at a concert. And some guy got up there, looked like he knew Jay-Z and was going to like, I don't know, attack Jay-Z or whatever. And Ron almost let the guy through, and then he stopped him at the last moment. Once he's like, he saw this look on Jay-Z's face, like, who is this guy? And it almost, it would have been like a big media, it would have been something in the news, because possibly this guy was going to attack Jay-Z. Maybe just give him a hug, who knows? But it was a moment in this guy, Ron's life, where it's just a lot of crazy, crazy stories that are stranger than fiction. And so anyways, he built up a team and he empowered his employees. And it's a very, very valuable story for leadership in this day and age of empowering your team members to make decisions. So it was very good as well. And then the third book on leadership, this one I highly recommend as well. I guess if you're going to read one of these three, it's definitely this third one. And the third one is How to Be a Great Boss by Gino Wickman. He has a co-author on this. If you've never heard of Gino Wickman, he has another book called Traction, which is highly, highly, highly recommended, and it helps you put systems in place in your business. And then there's another book after that called Rocket Fuel, which is about the relationship between the visionary in the business and the integrator in the business. And you should read that. So those are a couple of good books. Now, those are good books that are nonfiction with lots of great stories in them. And I love history, which is like stories. So it's true stories, obviously. So I don't read a lot of fiction anymore. And history books have really become my distraction. So, you know, some people watch Game of Thrones or read Game of Thrones. I would rather read history, because some of the history in our lives has been just as crazy as Game of Thrones. So, for example, I'll tell you about one of the dark books that I'm reading that is full of very, very scary stuff that you would think comes right out of Game of Thrones. So before I get there, I'm going to talk about a couple of other books that I've read. The first is The Lessons of History by Will and Ariel Durant. This is, I forget when it's written, maybe just after the Second World War. Apologies if I got my timeline wrong. But essentially, it goes through history and just shows you we're repeating the same mistakes over and over again, and we will continue to repeat the same mistakes. I mean, it could have been written last week, this book. But it just shows that we continue to make the same mistakes because humans are wired in a certain way to make the same mistakes over and over again. That's why marketers and technology companies can exploit you and your behavior, because it's just like training a dog. You can train a dog to do almost anything with food, because that's how dogs are wired. And you can get humans to make a whole bunch of stupid mistakes because of the way that we're wired. And that continues on. And unless people do the big thinking, we're going to continue to make those mistakes, unfortunately. Another book that I read, which was a true story, not so much history, long time ago history, but recent history, is called The Trident. It was written by my friend, a guy named Jason Redman, who's going to be speaking at my Empire Summit. He's a Navy SEAL, and he basically got his face shot off in Iraq. And he talks about his story, his life story, his comeback. And I thought it was going to be all rah-rah, but no, it's actually like Jason was a bit of a dick. And he had a personal transformation by getting his face shot off. There's a lot of leadership lessons in there, because he was kicked out of the SEALs almost. I mean, he had to go and do all this rehabilitation work to get back into leading teams, because he made a stupid ego-based decision. And people always said, man, you're just careless. You know, you're just a wild card here. And we can't have you leading teams and putting people in danger, because he did put people in danger once. So he learned his lesson, and then sure enough, on like his second mission, back when he regained his respect, he gets ambushed and never is allowed to lead, is never physically able to lead missions again because of an injury to his arm. He almost got his arm shot off as well. So it's a horrible, like, I'm an anti-war guy. There's got to be another way for us to figure out solutions to problems than to do acts of violence, but so be it. And, you know, as a Canadian, I'm not, obviously not American patriotic about the armed forces, but I understand why someone might be. And so there's a lot of, you know, my perspective on this book is different than some people's. But one of the biggest lessons from it is that when he's in the military hospital in Bethesda, Maryland, where wounded warriors go to recover, is that, you know, people felt really sad for him. And he put up this sign on the wall that said, "If you enter here and with pity, get out of here. And it actually got mentioned in Michelle Obama's book, which I have not read, but it got a lot of PR and media. And so now Jason is a speaker and, you know, helps people overcome adversity. Next book, which is totally random, doesn't seem like it belongs in this list, is Seven Brief Lessons on Physics by Carlo Rovelli, I believe his name is. Anyways, I read The Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking, and I was like, I don't understand why everyone loves this book. And then I read these Seven Lessons on Physics, and it was okay too. If you're really into science, you might like it. It explains a few things, explains how the Einstein's theory of relativity explains things, but then the quantum physics explains things, and these two things that both explain things don't match up. So there's a whole lot of heads exploding in the physics world, I guess. Anyways, it was interesting. And so those are my history and science books. And that brings me to the darkest book on my list, which is The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. So The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich is like a 1,000-page book. It chronicles Hitler's ascension to power. And what most people don't know is that, you know, Hitler, brief history here, Hitler was he's Austrian. He ended up in the German army in World War I. He should have died in World War I. I mean, it's just like you read these stories and you're like, how did this guy survive? Another book that I read was All Hell Let Loose by Hastings, Edward Hastings, maybe, I think. He's a very famous historian from the UK. And there's a lot of stories about Hitler and that, about, you know, Hitler being, he shouldn't have survived the First World War. Anyways, he does. He goes crazy. He's so angry at the Bolsheviks. He hates communists. He's worried that, you know, Germany's going to be overcome by communists. He goes back to Germany. He tries to start his Nazi party. There's a whole bunch of guys who are like fighting for power in the Nazi party. So somebody else could have came up to power in the Nazi party, except Hitler maneuvered them. But then Hitler does something stupid and he shoots off a gun. He ends up in jail in 1920s, and he spends a couple of years there. He writes his Mein Kampf book, which I've never read. And then he gets out and there's this, I don't know how he pulls this off. He just gets, you know, violent people, really, really despicable people in his party that are willing to do anything. And they, you know, there's so many backroom deals, and somehow he ends up in power in the early 30s. And you're reading this book and you're going like, there were so many opportunities, like even just luck and other people and other conspirators against him, that it's amazing that he ended up coming to power. But it took him a long time. So people think, I used to think, I shouldn't speak for other people, but I used to think like, you know, he just didn't have any hard times. He's, you know, the next thing you know, he's the chancellor of Germany or whatever it is. And this guy was just one of the most persistent people in the world, which, I mean, he's a horrible person. He's an evil, evil person. He's the worst person probably to ever walk the face of the earth. And yet, the guy just would not quit. It's amazing how he got to the position. Anyways, he should have died. It's too bad he didn't. Who knows where we'd be right now, though. And so anyways, I'm about halfway through that book about the most evil person in the world. So just be clear, he is the evilest person in the world, and all the things he did was bad, and all the people he surrounded with were horrible, horrible people, but you might still learn something when you read that book. It's also absolutely scary about how people can be convinced to do stuff. And you have to understand, like I'm not a historian, so I should just shut up here, but you know, there was a lot of people who opposed him in Germany. And maybe they eventually came over to his side because of persistence and because of peer pressure. But there were a lot of Germans who hated the guy and didn't like him and tried to resist him. But, you know, all you ever think of is Germany was bad at that time. But there were a lot of people who didn't like him. And obviously, there were a lot of bad people with money that supported him. And, you know, it's unfortunate what power does to people. So anyways, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich is what I'm working through. And that one, I read it a bit, and then I find something like Shoe Dog, which is a little less depressing, and I read it. So now let's switch over to some really positive books. So you couldn't get much different from The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich than The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. Michael Singer is a very successful business person who all he wanted to do was meditate all day long. And he ends up in like another stranger than fiction book, which is The Surrender Experiment, which is one of his other books. But before The Surrender Experiment, he wrote The Untethered Soul, which is about overcoming judgment and the voices in your head. You know, we all have the voices in your head. Like, I can't shut mine up. You know, I'm walking down the street going, why is that person wearing that? What are they doing? What? And so Michael Singer is like, man, you just got to be present in the moment, not thinking all these things. You got, you know, all these things running through your head. Just be focused. And so that's one of the values of meditation. So Untethered Souls is a good book. I highly recommend it to people that are struggling with the internal thoughts and the comparison syndrome and all that. Next book I skimmed through was How to Raise Successful People by a woman whose daughters went on to be, one of them runs 23andMe, Ann Wojcicki, butchering the last name. Another one runs YouTube, and then another one's a pediatrician. So she raised like three of the most successful women in America by giving them a lot of independence, by allowing them to make their own choices as children. And so she wrote this book called How to Raise Successful People. So if you have children under the age of 10, go and read it, because it might give you some ideas. It might help you help them through some troubled times. So I skimmed it because I wanted to see if it was a good book for my sister and my brother-in-law, but their son's already like 13. And I think if your kids are teenagers, this book might be a little bit too late for you. Anyways, if you got younger kids, check it out. Then let's talk about some business books that I read. So I read The Millionaire Booklet, which is this tiny little booklet from Grant Cardone about his 7 tips on becoming a millionaire. And then I read 2 books by Michael Lowitz, called Profit First and Clockwork. So Profit First is a great book for you if you run a business, but you can't keep any money from the business. So it's absolutely essential reading. It's very similar to personal finance books that tell you to keep like 7 bank accounts and your paycheck goes into this, this, and this, and this, you know, percentage wise, pay yourself first, all that sort of stuff. So it's a very helpful book. A lot of people I know need it, and it was helpful to them. And then Clockwork helps you build the systems that allows your business to run like clockwork so you can take vacations. So I have a business partner who owns 2 fit body boot camps. I've never been to them. My business partner works in them, runs them, and he is on, as we speak, a 2-week vacation with no check-ins to the team. They're all prepared. Everything's going like clockwork because he has set it up. So, I mean, it took him 3 years to get there, but he's done it by building a great team, by being a great boss. So he is just an absolutely great young man. Daniel Woodrum in Charleston, South Carolina. So if you're looking for Fit Body Bootcamp, we're actually in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, and we're also in Greenville, South Carolina. Another book I read was Free PR by my friend Cameron Harold. So I've read 2 books by Cameron this year, Free PR and Vivid Vision. Free PR is good if you're looking for free PR. And then I read a book called Work Party, because one of my friends is a female entrepreneur who runs something called the Toronto Ladies Community. It's actually called the Ladies Community because now it's in multiple cities. And it's a female entrepreneur networking group. And I thought, hey, this Work Party was written by a woman in California who kind of does the same thing. So I skimmed through it. It's definitely written for women. And I was like, what are they talking about in some of these phrases? So it wasn't written for me, but I shared it with my friend. So if you're a female entrepreneur, you might want to check that out. Then I read Earl Nightingale's Strangest Secret, just because somebody sent it to me. One of my coaching clients sent it to me. I'm very grateful to Mark Evans, a sales expert from Wisconsin, who will teach you how to grow a 7-figure sales team. I'm very grateful to Mark for sending me that book. I had never read it before. And, you know, I've never read that book before, but I've read all the people who have read that book before, like Dan Kennedy and Tony Robbins and all that stuff. So I know the message. And then I read Trillion Dollar Coach, a story about a man who I admired from afar, a guy named Bill Campbell. He was the Trillion Dollar Coach. So Bill Campbell was originally a football coach. He, in Columbia University, decided that wasn't for him, went to work at Kodak, and, you know, back in the Kodak's heyday of the 70s and 80s, I think. And then he moved up to Silicon Valley, and he did some stuff with Apple and another company. And then he became a coach to Steve Jobs, to the guys at Google, to many other companies out there, even Amazon. And so he helped build these $100 billion companies, and they all add up to like over $1 trillion worth of wealth. And it was interesting because I always used to think, well, he must own like a part of all these companies in stock or something. And he said, I don't take stock, I don't take cash, and I don't take crap. And instead of crap, he said another word. As a coach, I don't take stock, I don't take cash, I don't take crap. So he was this guy. He was a really great coach to a lot of people. There was some weird dichotomies in the book, though. Like, he would insult you, like imagine a white privileged guy from the 1980s with like Dockers on, like the type of unacceptable insults that he would throw around. Like, this coach, they listed, and it was written by Eric Schmidt and two other guys, and I don't know why, but they listed like Bill Campbell's 10 favorite insults at the back of the book. And it's like, why would you share those in this day and age? Like, those are completely unacceptable. It's like mocking somebody's clothes, telling somebody they were an idiot. I'm like, okay, he may have said those, but you shouldn't like play them up as if they're good. Even if he was like a really great coach and really helpful, like, those insults have no place in the workplace of today. So it was really bizarre that they put that in there. It was really bizarre that all the people that read the book, including like, they thank Adam Grant, who's, you know, a Wharton speaker, professor and an author of many books. Like, Adam Grant must have looked at that and said, no, you guys shouldn't put this in there. And they still put it in because it's really, really strange. Anyways, it was an okay book. You'll learn a little bit, but all the major lessons I had actually learned from my business partner, Matt Smith. One of them being, whenever you find a great offer, go all in on it, move fast on it, focus on it. Another one is, managing people is like raising children. And it is, right? You want to coach them up. You want them to be their best. You want to support them. But you also want to give them challenges where they have to go out and learn for themselves. So, you know, Matt had told me those many times before. So it was good enough to read. So if you're really into coaching, check it out. Or if you're really into Silicon Valley, check it out. This guy left a massive, massive impression on people. Obviously, he wasn't perfect, but he really, really did help a lot of people. And he was really forward thinking. Like, he was about getting more females on the board and all that sort of stuff. But then he had these stupid, like, old white guy insults that he would lay on people. Just didn't make sense. And then back to Cameron's second book, Vivid Vision. So I'm a huge proponent of creating a vision for your business and for your life. I talk about that in the Perfect Day Formula. Cameron has a short book called Vivid Vision, which helps you write the vivid vision for your company. And when you write one of these things, you'll be shocked at how true it will come the more specific you are. Trust me. I'm going to do a full podcast on vision creation coming up very soon. But until then, read Vivid Vision by Cameron Harold, and also read chapter 21 of my book, The Perfect Day Formula. You can get a copy of that at freeperfectdaybook.com. And then I also talk about your values and your vision in the first third of Unstoppable, which you can get a free copy of at beunstoppablebook.com. Your best decision here for my books is to go to beunstoppablebook.com, get the Unstoppable book, and take the first premium offer, which is to get the Perfect Day Formula kit, which has all the worksheets in it. It's going to change your life. It is like getting a full day of coaching with me for like $100. It's absolutely amazing. So grab that at beunstoppablebook.com. Wow, that was a fun episode. Obviously, I rambled about some of the books because I just get super excited about reading and want to share these lessons with you. So I'm going to read another 20 books over the rest of 2019 as I travel through Europe and go to California for my events. So I'll have some plane rides to read, and I'll be reading in bed and snacking on protein bars and staying up past my bedtime, all in the name of helping you, okay? So I'm making these sacrifices for you. Don't forget it, okay? So as I snack on my protein bars, painful life of reading books past my bedtime and not getting enough sleep, I'm doing this for you. So I would love to know what you thought of today's show. Do you want more book reviews? Because I got lots of books on the shelves that I have read that I haven't talked about. So let me know if you want that. Send me a message on Instagram at RealCraigValentine or email me at support@earlytorise.com and let me know what you thought of today's show. And then head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. We are nearly at 300 reviews and I'd absolutely love to hit that level. So thank you very much. And the last thing I want you to do is go to beunstoppablebook.com today. Get the first book, Unstoppable, and then get the Perfect Day Formula Kit. It will change your life. It is my work in my life's work in a box for you. Okay. And if you have other books to recommend to me, send me an email at support@earlyarise.com or an Instagram message at Real Craig Valentine. I'd love to hear what the number one book is that you are reading this year.